welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth, and this week's special guest, Lena Norris.
Hey. Hello.
This week we're talking about worries with warming and a coming collapse, but first, we have a wee review. This one is 5 stars. It says, a fascinating and engaging podcast. I've listened to every episode of SciGuys and find it a great way to start my week. I especially like the topics that deal with crazy experiments, mental illness, gender, and sexuality. Are those all the same thing? Who knows? Recently, a doctor diagnosed me with ADHD, and it was your episodes on autism and ADHD that helped me realize this about myself. Thanks, SciGuys. I look forward to more crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. Isn't that nice?
I can't wait for the right-wing media to tell us that SciGuys is giving people ADHD.
Oh, we're giving people
contagious.
ADHD and autism. Yes! Yes!
You coughed on everyone.
It's a digital cough. And speaking of digital cough, this is something entirely unrelated. It's a question for you here and everyone who's watching or listening at home. If you're listening on Spotify, you know what to do. Get down to the comments. Same goes for YouTube. But if you're elsewhere, Apple or Castbox or somewhere else that you use only your ears, here's what you do. Set the atmosphere on fire. I don't care how you do it. Just set it on fire, okay? And then use this flaming atmosphere to send smoke signals to Mars. My Martian friends will let me know what your answer is. Anyway, the question is, aren't you anxious about climate change?
I am a little anxious. But I think anxious implies that it's not a logical response. So I'd like to question the question.
I agree. I think that's giving you a very good idea of where this episode is going. Luke, how do you feel about climate change? Positive, right? That's what you were saying to me earlier.
I can't wait,
love
man.
It. Oh. Change it more.
But you don't need to wait. It's happening already.
Oh, well, even better. Am I anxious about climate change? Yeah, I'm anxious about climate change. I think, like everybody, probably not as much as I should be. Like most people should be more anxious than they are. And that's probably another bit of the episode I spoiled. On we go.
Teased. Not spoiled. Teased.
Spoiled.
Shall we start off with some climate change statistics?
Just to get us all riled up and anxious, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lena, you have those ready to go, don't you? You prepared
yeah.
some?
Oh, yeah. Climate change is 100% bad.
Uh-huh. Very good. Very good.
And I think we have a 30% chance of solving it. How's that for a start?
Well, that's good. That's good. And I have a little thing to share with you all. It's a podcast. It's not this one. It's another one. Do you know anything about that podcast?
No. Mine.
Yeah, it's yours.
Oh, mine. Yes, I have a podcast called No Books on a Dead Planet, which is the only way I can make myself panic about the climate is thinking about how there won't be any books there. Problematic. But people can't register. Plants, no, it's not going in. Books, that feels like an emergency.
You need plants to make books, though. So.
Yeah, you do. That's so deep. No trees.
Have you ever heard of an audiobook?
Yeah.
Or a Kindle, huh?
What does the person who reads the audiobook read from? Paper.
A Kindle.
No.
Duh.
Oh, God.
From their mind. They just improvise. Yeah. From the stars.
But no, yeah, if you want a little stepping stone from this podcast to that one, we did an episode together. I mean, you had me on as a guest for your episode.
We did it together. It was a group effort. We read a book.
In this same room, actually.
It was.
Yeah, you can't see it. It's audio only.
We read The Uninhabitable Earth, which is the scariest book on climate I've ever read. So thank you for accompanying me through that. True trauma.
Don't worry. There were no ghosts, so I was well okay.
You were surprisingly upbeat.
I like
that's
the idea of
feedback.
A dead planet. I love it. I'm like, yeah, let's... Woo! No, I'm joking, of course. It was a fantastic episode. Thank you for having me on. And go ahead and listen to that once you finish listening to this and all of our other episodes as well. Dotterman, who knows? Anyway, climate change stats. What do you think is going on with the climate? Is it getting hotter? Is it getting colder? Or is it staying the same?
Both. But on average, warmer.
Very
hotter
good.
Where it shouldn't be, colder where it shouldn't be.
Yeah, basically everything's going wrong.
So, unideal places.
But climate change, the climate changes normally. No, ice ages have happened. The opposite of iced ages have happened. Is climate change not normal?
I think at this rate, maybe not.
Ah.
Is that the...
Yeah, that would you right would be answer. Right. The Earth's current rate of change in climate has not been seen in the past 10,000 years. So that's... That's quite a while. Mm. You remember 10,000 years ago? Either of you?
It's all a haze. I was probably drunk. Sorry.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
Like, you would have been drunk on like rotting fruit 10,000
yeah,
years ago.
Definitely.
What do you think people get drunk on now?
Well, okay, but rotting fruit, but like...
Just like from under my actual toes, like picking it from my, between my actual toes.
I'm moving on, okay? So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, have said, since systematic scientific assessments began in the 1970s, the influence of human activity on the warming of the climate system has evolved from theory to established fact. So if you think that climate change doesn't exist, that's pretty stupid, to be honest. Like, I could be nice as dumb. It's a really dumb thing to think. Stop it. Anyway, if we look at sort of ice cores, rocks, tree rings, you know, ask the plants what they think. Basically, just look at all of the metrics we've got for the planet. We can see that the climate is bloody changing. All them species that are dying, that's another signal of the climate being changing.
Yeah, we should ask them about it.
I'd love to, Luke. I'd love to.
But they're all dead.
Oh, no.
They've gone the way of the dodo, and not because they were delicious and very easy to capture. Or maybe that's not how the dodo died. I don't know. Who cares? We'll do a bonus episode on it. Anyway, so the land and ocean, the combined land and ocean temperature has increased at an average of 0.14 degrees Fahrenheit. Why did I read that one out? Disgusting. 0.08 degrees Celsius for everyone, except for those... in that continent. And that's per decade since 1880. So that's 0.08 degrees Celsius per decade since 1880. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. That's an average global temperature. Bearing in mind, like, I mean, if we think about that, what is it? The Uninhabitable Earth? Whatever, the book that we read that I don't remember anything about at this point. A few degrees of warming is... very bad. It's devastation. That's
every degree is like a completely different world.
Yeah, yeah. We can't survive in our current sort of civilizations with, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 degrees. 7 degrees of warming is insane. Like, on average, like, I feel like people are thinking, oh, but like the difference between, you know, it being 20 degrees in summer and 27 degrees in summer is not that bad. That's fine. Averages. Think about how averages work.
Yeah,
it's
you could also have no change in average temperature, but then like your summers are 50 degrees and your winters are like negative 30 degrees and it averages out to the same temperature.
Yeah.
It's the volatility. It's also the volatility of the temperature as well as the average that's important.
Absolutely.
So you could literally have no climate change average. We don't have that, but you could have no climate change average, and that could still be worse if the biggest and the smallest cancel each other out in the average.
Yeah, absolutely. And bear in mind as well that just slight changes in temperature can be very bad for other creatures on this planet. Like, coral can't deal with too many changes in temperature. There are plenty of animals, for example, wherein the sex determination is the temperature that the eggs are at.
Yeah, weird. Mm.
And, like, you can, like, I may be, like, take this with a grain of salt, look it up yourself, but I have read somewhere that they have seen some, I think maybe crocodiles or snakes or some kind of reptile. They've... like, you know, too many of them are being born, I think, female or whatnot, because the eggs are the wrong temperature. Like, somewhere around that area. Have a look into it yourself. But, like, that general idea is something that I have seen before. And it's not just, you know, it's not just temperatures going up. There's also, I was going to say heat waves, but wildfires, floods, tropical storms, droughts, hurricanes, all of these sorts of things. Do you remember back when we were younger than we are now? Maybe about a decade and a half ago, when, like, hurricanes weren't all that common.
No, they were big news. It was like, there's a hurricane. It was like, ooh.
Yeah.
So enough for us to hear about it in Britain.
Yeah, exactly. And now it feels like there aren't any hurricanes, but I feel like that's just because there are so many hurricanes that we're just not hearing about them.
Yeah, we've gone through the alphabet several times now, naming women after. We've gone through Katrina. That feels like a long time ago.
Sorry, naming women after hurricanes.
Wait, naming hurricanes after women.
That's where women get their names.
Hurricane Lena, 1982. Look at
good God. But seriously, right? Like, these, like, natural disasters that we called them, it feels like the term natural disaster just isn't applicable anymore. Mm. And if this is stressing you out, good. So
sit with that emotion.
Yeah.
Don't push it away. Sit with it.
Sit with us in it right now. No matter where you are, if you're on the bus, if you're not on the bus, the two places that one could be, it doesn't matter. That's true. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
Yeah. Categories.
On the bus or not on the bus. It's a binary category. There is literally nowhere else you could be.
What about like half of you on the bus? Like as you get on the bus.
You're on the
bus.
In
the process of being ejected from the bus.
So you're still on. Until you are fully off the bus, you're on the bus. You know?
I think this is the problematic binary rearing its ugly head.
You're a problematic binary. Anyway. So 3.6 billion people already live in areas which are, what do you think? What do you think the end of the sentence is?
At risk of disappearing.
Highly susceptible to climate change. So, more or less.
What percentage was that?
That's 3.6 billion people already live in areas highly susceptible to climate change.
That's like half of the people.
That's half of the people we have.
Yeah, nearly half the people.
Yeah. That's half of the team.
Yeah, it's like all of the women. What if all of the women were to go? Then we're just left with all the dudes.
What would we use these hurricane names for?
Oh, no. No, I don't know what to name after my hurricane.
Everyone's been naming their penises after hurricanes.
I'm surprised men don't already name their penises after hurricanes.
I'm going to move on from that.
I'm disappointed to find out that's not the case. I thought that was something that was happening without my supervision.
So between 2030 and 2050, climate change is expected to cause approximately 250,000 additional deaths per year from undernutrition, malaria, diarrhea, and heat stress alone. Not all, just those things I mentioned.
Not even like
I didn't like it.
Being very like drowned.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that won't happen. It's slow enough that you probably won't drown.
It depends how slow you are, Luke. It really depends.
That's true.
Who knows? But no, seriously, yeah. I mean, like, ultimately, you got to think about it this way, right? If water levels rise, I feel like people don't think about this. And I think we've mentioned this in another episode. I think we even mentioned this on your podcast, Lena. When people think about water levels rising, I mean, and I feel like I definitely used to think about this. They think about the water coming closer to them. So if you say, oh, there's a meter of water rising, they're like, ah, yeah, the water, the shore is getting a meter closer than it was before. No. The water level is going up a meter.
So if you have a very flat area of land near your coast, all of it's under the water.
Yes, hasta la bye-bye. Obviously, there's more complex things at play there as well, but... But yeah, things are going to be underwater.
And I don't think people realize how many countries are protected by ocean barriers right now that would split. So it's not actually just a gradual thing. Like the whole of the Netherlands, it could. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
There's lots of places that are actually already below water level.
Oh, before
water
sea level, yeah.
Sea level. And they're only protected by these very precarious concrete barriers that wouldn't withstand more.
So they'd become lakes.
Yes.
Like the Great Lakes, you know, like Lake Michigan, except it's all of Netherlands. Yep. And what would we do without that? What would we do without the Dutch, huh? What would we do without people that were thought it was okay to do blackface at Christmas until, you know, about 4 years ago? Huh? What would we do without them? No, I like the Dutch. I don't know. I just want to bring that one up.
Don't like their new leader, though.
I don't know. Yeah. I literally know nothing about their new leader.
It's bad news. That's what I know.
Oh, cool. Good. So, good to know.
Really bad.
I don't want to think about that. I'd rather be anxious about the climate.
Okay.
I don't think this guy's anxious about the climate.
I have heard about this, actually, and I want to continue not thinking about it. But yeah, ultimately, this is all... happening, and it's going to continue happening until we actively try to stop it. And even then, it's going to continue happening. We're past the point of stopping it, right? We are now in a point, like, you know, in an era where we just need to limit the damage. And the longer we take to do that, the more we kick the can down the road and pretend green energy isn't, you know, isn't sort of feasible because it doesn't make certain people enough money. The worst things are going to be for everyone. And, you know, we've all said this, or rather, we've all been present while I've said this. I don't really listen to what anyone else says, sorry. But we've all been present for the conversations around the human race not dying out, but things just being drastically changed, right? Like, you know, the world is going to change so, so drastically that many people are going to die. We'll probably still keep on surviving, but not in the way that we do now. And also, a lot of poor people will die, a lot of vulnerable people will die, and... fingers crossed, rich ones too. But hey, silver linings.
Can't have everything.
You know. But yeah, no, I mean, do you guys have any climate change stats or facts or things that are coming to mind you want to throw out?
I think something I learned recently, I went to this ethical consumer conference, because of course I did. That's what I do in my spare time. And I learned that there's enough daylight over an hour for us to collect to power the whole world for a year. So the actual amount of resources we have to solve it are all there, and the idea that we can't use green energy is wild. That's something that's not completely related, but something that I was like, there are solutions. It's just that there's so many infuriating things to learn that I just don't understand why we're being sold that it's impossible.
Well, the one thing I would like to add on that, I'm currently reading a book called How the World Really Works, I think it's called. Mm. And it's talking about how we very much really need to do something about this. Mm. But I haven't finished it. I wish I'd finished it by now in order to be on this episode. But it talks a lot about how the stuff that we get from petrochemicals are so deeply embedded in everything that it's actually way more complicated than any of the politicians who are saying the solutions are all there, we just need to implement them. They either don't understand or they're lying, because all of our lubricants come from anything turning comes from petrochemicals, and then a lot of our fertilizers come from chemicals. From petrochemicals, so from oil, and I'd never quite appreciated.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, right. Mm. How deeply embedded? Because we get the oil out of the ground, and some of it becomes petrol or plain fuel or diesel.
Fractional distillation.
But then a bunch of the other stuff is some of it becomes Lego, and then some of it becomes lubricants, and some of it becomes fertilizer, and some of it becomes all these other things. Which if we absolutely eradicated oil from the pipeline. Pun intended, then we'd have to either continue digging up oil in order to continue getting those things that we do still need, or find alternatives, some of which we don't have alternatives for yet. And it was just a very interesting read. I really recommend it. Anyone who wants to learn more about the realities of this, it's really interesting read. And it is scary, the magnitude of the problem we face, because ultimately the knock-on thing that will happen from the economic perspective is if we outlawed using petrol, for example, and diesel and plain fuel coming from oil, you'd still have to dig up oil in order to make those other things if you don't have alternatives to them. Mm. And so you'd have a surplus of a bunch of this fuel that you're not allowed to burn, and all those other things would become more expensive because they're not being subsidized by the price of the petrol that you get to sell from the oil you've dug up.
It's a lot to absorb to say. I think what we have to absorb is that we have to rebuild everything from around 1880 onwards. Anything we've invented, we need to maybe just go back and reinvent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't have 120 years or 140 years.
Yeah.
We've got maybe 10.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of innovation problems.
Yeah. I think the kind of point that this book, I haven't finished it, but the kind of the point that it sort of suggests that it's going to make in its introduction, for example, is it sort of says there isn't really a way of solving this problem that means that we all get to maintain our standard of living.
No.
We all need to take a standard of living cut in order to fix this, or we're screwed.
Or we just don't have a living.
Yeah.
But
people don't think like that.
But when you think about our standard...
They aren't willing to give up their standard of living.
But when you think about our standard of living, right, it is kind of unreasonably high, right? American consumerism in particular, right? You know, you walk into a Walmart and there are 20 to 30 different brands who are all owned by the really, realistically, three companies for one individual kind of product, right? It's not necessary, right? Mm. That's not a necessary thing that we need. There are so many unnecessary products, so many things that we don't need that are just being made. If we think about the lithium batteries that are in vapes that are just being disposed of constantly, right? We are so incredibly wasteful. And I think that, ultimately, taking a standard of living cut isn't going to be as bad as people perceive it to be, right? Yeah. People were fine, ultimately, we've got medical advancements and whatnot, right? Ideally, we focus primarily on stuff that is essential, medical fields and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff, right? And, yeah. Maybe you don't get the convenience of Amazon delivering you something the same day that you ordered it. Maybe you don't get the convenience of going to the shop and having, fruit that is not in season in your country and barely in season in the country where it's been delivered from, right? Mm. Maybe we don't get to do that. Maybe we don't get to travel to other countries, multiple times a year by plane. Maybe we don't get to do all of those things. Mm. So what? Realistically, is that going to be so bad that it's worth just tanking the entire planet?
Of course, but the trouble is no one, or at least the majority of people, won't vote for it. So like it has to be kind of forced on you.
But the majority of people will vote for it if it's framed in the right way.
If they understand what they're voting for.
Yeah, exactly. If it's like if you say to someone, hey, you have a choice of dying or being slightly less comfortable than you are right now.
Oh, yeah, I know. But the other side's not saying let's die. They're saying this is being blown out of proportion.
Exactly.
These
guys but they're lying.
Are left-wing yeah. liberal idiots.
My point is that it's not like it's not a case of, oh, people won't vote for it. It's a case of people will vote for it. They just won't vote for it if they're being lied to.
But they will be lied to.
No, I know.
So, how do we...
I agree with you. I just want to be clear that
the... liars out of it.
I want to be clear that the situation here is not... The problem is not, we'll have to take a standard of living cut and people won't want to do that. The problem is people are going to lie to get their way, which is harmful to everyone, mm-hmm. right? I think it's about reframing what the problem is because the problem isn't standard of living cut. I mean, ultimately, right now, the standard of living in the UK is kind of decreasing. The cost of living is increasing, and it's not getting better. It's not like we're paying more for even the same. Mm. In a lot of cases, you're paying more for worse, right? Like, things are not great right now, and they don't seem to be getting much better. And again, we're very lucky in the UK. And when I say lucky, I mean we're lucky to have been born now in this country after we took everything from everyone else. Yay. But seriously, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're quite lucky in the UK, but we don't need all that we've got. Do you know what I mean?
Can I just say another statistic, which I'm going from memory from this book, which demonstrates exactly what you're saying there, Corey. This absolutely blew my mind. So it was trying to put into perspective how much energy or power or like potential the average person has because of the Industrial Revolution and our use of petrochemicals and all those kind of things. Like how much, you know, you've got your will.
Oh, gosh,
you've got your, like, I want this thing to happen. And how much more powerful are you now than you were, I can't remember what year, but like, say, in 1880, right? And the statistic was that the average person, it's like they have 200 members of staff 200 years ago.
Really?
Or 150 years ago.
I'm going to read this book.
Like,
you're selling it to me.
Yeah, in terms of, like, how much food you can have, the fact that some of it can be delivered to your house, the fact that electricity is generated and it costs relatively cheap, the fact that you have water flowing to your house, everything you have is the equivalent of, by some year, compared to some year, like you have 200 full-time staff, which is absolutely mind-blowingly insane.
And yet we're still miserable. Do you know what I mean?
Because
walking around Birmingham yesterday and I was like, everybody is miserable here.
But
nobody's
happy.
We have
to be miserable. But we have to be miserable. Because otherwise we won't want the stuff. Like, how can we... Okay, like, ultimately, all I want, right? I don't need to have Amazon delivering me stuff when we order it, right? It's very convenient for the podcast to be like, hey, Luke, can you, I want thing. I have problem. And Luke's like, problem solved. It's coming to your house in 2 to 3 days. Nice. Great. That's very convenient. But also, I wouldn't mind having, like, you know, if the communities were built for this, just having to go to the city center and get the thing, because that's what I had to do 10 years ago.
If
right?
the shops in the city center were open and if they sold your thing, which they don't at the moment
Because of Amazon, right? Like, and ultimately, like, I don't need, like, okay, yeah, Just Eat was really cool. Getting, like, you know, a food delivered to your house from your phone. Awesome. Great. But, like, going down to a takeaway, that's still fine. But also, cooking
quite
for
fun. It's quite fun. Wholesome.
But also, cooking for myself. The only reason, I think largely the reason that people don't cook for themselves isn't out of, like, oh, God, like, I'm lazy. Like, it's exhausting. We are working more for less money, and it's becoming harder and harder to do all of the things that one needs to. Like, we lived in a society up until, you know, we're not living in a society anymore. No, but we lived in a society, you know, very recently, wherein you had one person whose entire job was make house okay, make food, look after children, and keep house. And whilst someone else went out and did other job to make money to, you know, facilitate all of that. And now, like a household that with two people earning income still isn't necessarily enough to live super comfortably, depending on where you live and, like, you know, how much income you're making. Like, if you talk about minimum wage, right? That's way too low, like ridiculously low. If you're not able to raise a family, you know, of four, let's say, you know, like two parents, two children on minimum wage, For what, from one person?
It's not a living wage.
That's not a living wage.
Yeah.
That's literally not a living wage.
And what is the point if it's not?
Exactly.
Like, what's it for?
What it's for Jeff Bezos to get ripped? Like, that's my point, right?
But what's what's the minimum wage for?
No, it's the minimum wage. It's not a living
but
wage.
But what's the minimum wage for?
It's for how little money you're allowed to give poor people.
No, but I mean, what's it for if not to, like...
Okay, Luke.
It's so stupid.
You can ask the Living Wage Foundation who trying to make the living wage and the living wage
here's
the same
how it works,
thing.
Right? Do you guys remember guillotines that...
Yeah.
Chop, right?
Ah, yes.
Now, the minimum wage has to stay as low as possible, but still above what I like to call the guillotine line, which is the line whereby the poor people start cutting off your heads. So long as you keep it as low as possible, but above that line, you're fine. Living wage doesn't matter at all so long as the poor aren't revolting. And they are revolting. And they should be revolting. Sorry, that was three different uses of the word revolting. But seriously, like it's literally just a case of how little can you pay people before they go.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
So you're saying
they wouldn't admit that. So what would they claim it's for? They'd claim it's for something else. And so it should be at that line, the line that they claim it's for.
Okay, here's what it is. It's for it's not for serious people who are working. It's for teenagers and
no, because they have a different minimum wage. That's already implemented in law. They have a different minimum wage.
It's for people who haven't got the skill set to shut up. Just you ungrateful.
Oh, you paying attention to the things that we say. Oh, holding us to the standard that which we claim to set ourselves to. Oh, you so annoying.
But yeah, no. All of this. So, I mean, standard of living being lower would probably be fine if we had communities that were set up to, like, ultimately, nuclear power can give us a lot of energy, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, like, our issue with energy is not a problem, right? We can get our energy. Yes, there are products and whatnot that require lubricants and all of these sorts of things. We can continue using those things whilst we work on developing, like, alternatives and make the change more gradually. Because ultimately, right, you know, like, we need to limit the problem as much as possible. And it is possible. It's just difficult and not immediately monetarily beneficial. So it's just being framed as being, oh, it's a really difficult thing. No, you're just going to lose money. That's fine. That's okay.
I'm interested in the people who aren't experiencing eco-anxiety and are the people that Luke are talking about where they're just like, they're going to lie to the public or they're running these businesses. I'm interested as to whether they actually believe the climate change data and they just think that they're exempt from it.
Well, Boris Johnson doesn't understand.
Well, then they don't actually understand it. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it that they think that they're exempt from it? Is it some kind of removal of like reality, or is it that they just don't get it and we need to explain it again? Like,
I think it's a spectrum,
and they're also building bunkers. Some of them. So
I think it's a spectrum, and I think some people are just fundamentally. I say fundamentally. It's not a sort of fundamental innate part of their being. I just mean fundamentally in terms of their decision making process. Are selfish, fundamentally selfish. Mm.
And also I think that they don't necessarily identify with their future selves.
Because it would be a selfish act to preserve yourself and do this.
Yeah.
That's what's confusing to me is that they are selfish.
But that's the thing. You can still preserve yourself. You just don't preserve anyone else.
But I also think that sometimes some people don't calculate what would be best for them in 30 years. Because they don't consider 30 years from now self them. I don't think they're factoring that into their equations. It's also that they're selfish and also that they don't care and also that they're rich enough that they won't really be affected by it. Mm. Lots and lots of things. But I think there's a decent portion of it is that I don't actually think some people like that are actually really projecting into the future by very many years.
Yeah, they just don't have a sense of time itself. Or they find that they're invincible. Because it's also like this thing of like if the very rich might survive in bunkers, but I don't think they will because of the air quality, the fact that when the ice melts, it's going to release loads of prehistoric diseases.
Who's
going to work for them?
Like, that's the main
thing. I have a lot of questions about whether they will actually, but they obviously think that they will.
Yeah, but I think it's, again, Don't Look Up was magic in... Have you seen Don't Look Up?
I have. Yeah. Did you like it?
Look, it was annoying and stressful and it pretty much captures the feeling, right? Mm. And I think, you know, so in Don't Look Up, spoilers for a movie that came out on Netflix ages ago. Sorry.
Catch up.
But yeah, no, at the end where, you know, all of the rich people leave the planet that's being hit by a big rock falling from the sky, they go to another planet and they just all basically immediately die. Because of course they do. Because a bunch of rich people, CEOs and whatnot, they're not able to, like, you know, run a society. They're not able to participate in a society and have that society be functional, right? Because fundamentally, what you have to end up doing is just, like, engaging in all of the things that they have avoided, they have paid people to do. So, like, they're very quickly going to realize that, oh, things are terrible now, and I don't have people that I can coerce into doing things for me by, you know, withholding basic necessities. So... Oh, damn, I guess I should have just given up some of the dragon's hoard I had stashed away, and maybe I could have still been coercing people into doing things for me. You know, like, I feel like that would be the realization if they weren't, you know, dying from whatever. But speaking of dying, shall we talk about the health effects of climate change? What do you think is going on with that? How do you think it affects health?
Skin cancer.
That's not one that I've got here, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, depletion of the ozone layer. We got it back. Yeah,
she's back in town.
Whoa, that can cause, you know, increased rates of skin cancer. I mean, more UV rays, yes, you know, or rather, higher exposure to UV rays, yeah, increases one's risk of skin cancer, but also, air quality, as you're saying.
Is not good.
I mean, if you think about London, lots of people actually die in London from the poor air quality. It's not, I mean, it's reported on, but it's just kind of, we just kind of accept it as part of sort of being here. So just some stats for you. As I've already mentioned, 3.6 billion people live in areas highly susceptible to climate change. In vulnerable regions, the death rate from extreme weather events in the last decade was 15 times higher than in less vulnerable ones. So it's not something, it's going to affect everyone. It's not going to affect everyone equally. Vulnerable people have been affected already and are still being affected. When you see old people dying, or young people dying, or just generally people dying during the summer in the UK, that's deaths from climate change. That's what that is, because it's getting too hot here. Same as, you know, if we get a really bitter winter, same thing goes there, right? These are all deaths from climate change that people just don't really think of. But also illness as well, you know, tropical diseases. Buddy, if things get warmer and these tropical diseases, which can only exist in certain temperatures and certain climates, start to migrate, that's not good.
The mosses are coming.
Yeah, and then there's the prehistoric illnesses from the ice caps dying. Oh God!
Is that actually,
that was in the uninhabitable Earth?
How sort of, I guess, problematic is that? Do you know what I mean?
Well, as in, like, will it be bad?
Yeah, like because
we haven't got any. We haven't developed any of the autoimmune immunity to those things, and they're really bad. I really should have revised my facts on this. I'm like, real bad.
They work on us, I suppose.
That's the thing. I think that's for me. I think of that, and I'm like, that could be that could go either way. Where it could either be like really, really bad, or kind of okay.
I don't want to find out.
And I agree with you.
I'm not interested in that. Like, I don't have that curiosity in me. I just don't want to know.
I feel like with all of this, you got to take the wins where you can, where it's like, that one isn't necessarily terribly bad.
We can just put it back on ice.
Exactly.
But I suppose,
like the bubonic plague.
It's if there's one that's like real bad.
Yeah, it takes
like 10 million of them, and most of them don't work on us because it's been a long time. Like trying to infect a Windows, a Windows 11 with like a Windows 98 virus.
Yeah.
But if one of those Windows 98 viruses takes over the entire world of computers, that's still pretty awful.
Well, I've got a perfect little analogy for you. It starts with a C and ends in COVID-19. We don't need to think about what would happen if we're still in a pandemic. Yeah. So.
And that could have relatively been a lot worse. I'm not saying that the COVID pandemic wasn't bad, but it could have. I was sitting there for the first few weeks thinking, this could be really shit. It could have been way worse than it was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
If it was more infectious or more deadly.
Whereas Corey, in the first 2 weeks, was looking at all of the data that was coming out and was following expert advice and then said that his opinion was, if it's dealt with properly, this could be over in a few weeks, like swine flu. Because at the point that was said, we didn't have enough evidence to say that it would be really bad. And also, The government dealt with it terribly, okay? If they'd done a good job, we probably would have been less bad.
I agree.
Okay? Anyways, moving on. Thank you, Luke. But yeah, no, I mean, there's going to mean more migrants and whatnot as well. More people living in like sort of more dense areas, which again increases risk of disease. This has been a long time, and I'm sure we're going to have those classic comments of, "You were talking not. There's not enough science in this episode about signs of climate anxiety." We're getting to it. All right, climate change is science. It's very important. And like ultimately, you don't need to know how it's happening. We should all know how it's happening. Planet getting hotter because greenhouse gases trap heat in, make planet hotter, make ocean hotter, ocean stores more heat, and also ice starts to melt, and then that starts to release more carbon into the air, which then increases, it's bad, okay? It's a runaway train, and we're not, instead of trying to stop it, we're like, well, we're gonna hit the wall at some point, but maybe I'll have died by the time we do that, so...
There are secondary health effects to things like becoming a migrant as well, because if you live in an area that, like, the value of your house has gone to zero because your town is going to be destroyed by rising sea levels, and you have to move countries. Yes, you're going to make the Ben Shapiro joke of just sell your house.
Aquaman.
Ben Shapiro lied to me?
Ben Shapiro
Aquaman
lied to
Aquaman is
you.
Looking for a house. Yeah, Aquaman. And he wants to view yours.
Look, Aquaman has basically no business acumen, okay? He does not understand the laws of supply and demand. He doesn't get the housing market. So you could sell your zero value house to Aquaman.
Well, but he has plenty of business. He has loads of business acumen then, because he's going to buy all the houses. He's going to have loads of houses.
Oh, wow.
He's going to like all of our MPs. He's going to have hundreds of houses. I was just going to say, like, if you then have to leave your home and you have to, because countries start closing their borders and you have to go on foot, people die doing that. People get ill doing that. They then don't have any money because they put most of their money in their house and they're now in poverty, and there's health effects of poverty. Like, there's all these horrible spiraling effects that are beyond just like the immediate effects of climate change. People will have to, like, people die migrating across different countries on foot. All the time.
Yeah, yeah. And our government tries to make sure of it. Sorry, allegedly. No, not allegedly. No, they don't care. Anyway.
If they've made it this far in. Oh, wow. They deserve.
Ding-ling-ling. Are you there, God? It's me, the ad bell.
Ugh, what do you want?
I want the lovely listeners and viewers of SciGuys to know that they can support the show without spending any of their own money.
Right, and what do you want me to do about it?
Well, I want you to tell them all that they can do that by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts for SciGuys.
Hello, SciGuys listeners, it's me, God. You can support the show by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a 5-star, very nice review.
And don't forget, if you don't have access to Apple Podcasts, it helps just as much to go ahead and leave a lovely YouTube comment. Amen.
Are we done? I've got a plague to organize.
Okay, let's get back to the show. Shall we talk about climate anxiety? Mm-hmm. So, climate anxiety, does anyone want to hazard a guess at what it is?
I have a feeling that it's not actually a medical term. It's two words that we've jammed together. Or have they actually started medically defining it?
Well, no. To my knowledge, it's not medically defined. I mean, I think you can find something on the NHS about it, but like, there's a lot of literature coming out about it. Mm. And ultimately, I think... We can get to this in a bit about my thoughts of the term climate anxiety, but there's a lot of research on how climate change is affecting not just physical sort of somatic health, but also mental health. So not the kind of health we normally think about, but also how it affects your brains and minds, and not just in the sort of literal way that you might think of, well, climate change changes the environment and that changes certain things that make you make your brain change. That is an effect, pollution and whatnot, and all of these things can have an effect on your brain. But just knowing what is happening is quite stressful. So some stats here for you. Force of Nature, a youth nonprofit, found that over 70% of young people feel hopeless in the face of the climate crisis. Up to 56% think that humanity is doomed, and only 26% feel like they know how to contribute to solving the problem. So 74% don't feel that they know how to contribute to the problem.
I would love to know whether that 70% and that 20%, like 25% you say, sorry.
26%.
26%.
Yeah,
do they overlap? Do you know what I mean? Like, are the people who are worried about the climate also the people who know what to do about it? Or actually, because they know what to do about it, are they worrying less?
That's,
do you know what I mean?
Interesting.
Like,
yeah.
Like, how many, like, where's the Venn diagram there? Because I wonder, the more I learn about how we can solve it, the actual calmer I feel about it. And actually, I feel... even though I know that I don't have the power, at least I know the part that I can do, and then everything else should be a little bit less stressful for me because I'm like, I'm doing what I can do.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what I mean? I think the idea of not knowing, like, it's kind of like when you find a lump, you go for a scan, and it's like before you've got a diagnosis, that's like the worst part I hear is like not knowing.
I think partly for this as well, this is why I think the word anxiety is a little bit unhelpful here because I think anxiety, it is being correctly used in like a literal sense, because, you know, but we use the word anxiety in the same way if a lion's about to eat you and you run away and it's motivated by a activation of your fight or flight response and you run away from the lion, as like anxiety disorder, where like your anxiety, your fight or flight response might be being triggered when there's not an actual stimuli where it's appropriate for it to be triggered, right?
Yeah.
We use the same word for those two things. Anxiety, when it's triggered by something that is helpful, something that is like actually happening, is helpful for motivating you to do something to change your situation, right? If everybody had some anxiety about climate change, we would all be motivated to do something, and we would vote people in who might do something, and we might take some action. Whereas if there's an amount of anxiety you have that is disproportionate to the amount that you can do about it, that might be unhelpful for you. Even though it's warranted, obviously it's warranted because you're flipping scared. If it's not to do with motivating some action, I think that's where you could start talking about it as a sort of, you could talk about it in a therapeutic context because there's nothing you can do about it, right? So it is ultimately unhelpful because it's not motivating action.
But there's nothing that you can do about it as an individual, but there is something that can be done. I think that anxiety to a non-solvable problem is different to anxiety to a solvable problem that is not directly within your power to solve.
Right, okay, you're right. So there's three versions. Mm. There's anxiety to an unsolvable problem, unsolvable by anybody. Anxiety for a solvable problem but not solvable by you. And anxiety for a solvable problem that you can solve. Okay, yeah, you're right. I made a distinction there with two categories. There are actually three.
Yeah, and also anxiety towards a perceived problem that doesn't actually exist. There are more categories. We can come up with categories after category after category, but I think the point that you've made still kind of stands, Luke, where, like, you know, I don't know if it does stand, you know, because I don't know if sort of medicalizing anxiety around an actual problem is beneficial. I mean, if we literally just look at the stats here, right? 10,000 children, I say children, children and young people from 16 to 25 years old across 10 countries, Australia, Brazil, Finland, France, India, Nigeria, Philippines, Portugal, the UK and the USA, with 1,000 participants per country. They surveyed all of these young people to sort of figure out where they stood on sort of climate change. And 59% were very or extremely worried. 84% were at least moderately worried. 84% of the, you know, this 10,000 people across 10 countries were like moderately worried about climate change. That is good in a sense of, yes, good. We, like, this generation understands the problem and is, you know, not feeling okay about it to a high degree. But, sad, anxious, angry, powerless, helpless, guilty. Those were reported by more than 50% of people. Like, all of those different emotions were reported by more than 50% of people. And more than 45% of respondents said that their feelings about climate change negatively affected their daily life and functioning. 75% said that the future is frightening. 83% said that they think people have failed to take care of the planet. So it's not just like, oh, I'm feeling anxious about this. And like, I've this is affecting my life and I don't know what to do. It's, I'm feeling anxious and I'm angry. Like, I'm frustrated. I'm annoyed. Like, I've been failed by my government. And that's something that continuously comes up in all of the literature that I've read, that it's not just people feeling worried or stressed or ill at ease. There is a very real sense of, why has this happened to me? Because, you know, I mean, for us, our generation, right? we've just been dumped in this. For as long as I can remember, in primary school, you know, even they were talking about global warming back when we were still calling it global warming before we changed it to climate change because conservatives decided, global warming, but it's cold. It's colder in winter. How could it be warming? Annoying. But for as long as I can remember, we've been talking about climate change and global warming and how, you know, we just need to make the changes. We just need to reduce, reuse, recycle and start some green energy, which there's not enough. Does green energy work? Who knows? You know, all of that sort of stuff we've been fed. And, you know, over the past 20 years, what's happened? It's just gotten worse.
Mm.
I've not been able to do anything about it. Mm. I mean, I've only been able to vote for, you know, 8 years, right? And how many general elections have I had in that time? One?
You've lost all of them.
Two maybe?
I don't think I've ever voted for something that's actually got in. How depressing is that? And I've been voting for like 12 years, maybe more. 13 years, and I've never got what I, yeah, never no, got what I not, wanted.
I've not had a single one. Actually.
Local elections.
Keir Starmer was talking about this recently. But I heard him in an interview talking about how the experience of being in opposition is the experience of pretty much losing every single vote, every single day you ever do anything.
Mm.
Because when you're in opposition, you don't have a majority and you pretty much just lose everything, but it's still important to turn up and do the vote.
Yeah.
Which is, well, like,
we are coming from the man that's deciding to turn into a Tory, but yeah, no, I guess the point does stand.
He just wants to lose less votes.
It wants to lose less votes by, because this is what bugs me. I'll just quickly say this. This bugs me about Labour, wherein, and the Democrats do this too, where they're like, yeah, the people that are, you know, the marginalised groups that support us and the people to the left, they're going to have to vote for us because it's either voting for us or letting the worst people win. So we don't need to cater to them. We'll just cater to the people farther to the right that, you know, we can win our votes with. And I'm like, no, actually, if you're going to turn into Tories, being better, your entire sort of argument of voting for you as at least we're not them doesn't work if you're basically them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It also only works in a first past the post system. It doesn't work in like a proportional number representation system.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like a better voting system that has been consistently chucked out by the people who benefit from it.
I lost with the referendum.
But yeah, sorry, go on.
I think that part of the if there are mental health precautions that we're not calling anxiety, I think it might be something more around maybe abuse or something where you're told one truth, but you're told to live in a different way and kind of gaslit into believing that it's necessary for you to carry on as normal. And that in the same way that you're describing Labour, it's just like, oh, well, we're not as bad as your last boyfriend. We only punch you in the face. We've never thrown you down the stairs. Do you know what I mean? I think it's actually that when we think about anxiety, I think sometimes I've felt anxiety. But again, it's hard because there is the definition of anxiety, feeling like a threat is not... feeling that a threat that is not there is there, or is anxiety feeling like a threat is immediate when it's actually not?
It's just so fear, I kind of feel dread, like you're, or uneasiness, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who experience anxiety, and I've experienced it as well, is having the feeling that something is happening to you now when it's not happening to you right now. And I feel like a lot of the people who are surveyed, you list all the different countries, and I'm like, probably the people in India who were experiencing climate anxiety are actually experiencing a real current threat, whereas the young people in the UK aren't experiencing an immediate threat, but their body is telling them that they are.
So I'm glad you said this.
I've got a fact face.
I'm glad you've said this. From that study, 92% of those in the Philippines feel that the future is frightening, compared to 56% in Finland. Philippines is far more affected by climate change currently than Finland. But yeah, so the idea is here that, you know, people who are sort of more on the forefront of this, who are like really taking the brunt of it, are feeling worse about it, which makes sense, you know?
Mm.
I find it quite funny because you know how much some of these guys on whatever side's not me, like hate the idea of immigration and also specifically reparations.
Yeah.
The next generation are going to have loads of immigration, and they're also basically going to be paying reparations for the previous generation's mistakes, right? Like, the idea that, like, don't punish the, what is it, like, don't punish the son for the crimes of the father or whatever. Like you said earlier, we're being punished or going to be punished for the crimes of, like, the 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, when they knew that this was coming and they didn't do anything, like, anything at all.
And the thing is, they thought in a lot of cases, people thought that, yeah, this is not going to be a problem for 100 years, blah, blah, blah. And you still see conservatives, and it is conservatives, pulling out, you know, predictions from climate scientists saying, ha, that hasn't happened yet. Ridiculous. Are you ignoring the fact that people are literally dying from climate change right now? Whether, like, if maybe it's not as severe as people said, but, like, deaths from climate change are happening already, you know? Like, probably earlier than most people thought. And when I say most people, I don't mean scientists. I mean just regular average Joes and Josettes.
Oh, yeah. I think if you asked an average person whether climate change deaths are happening now, they would say, no, that's in the future.
Yeah.
No, they're happening in the UK
because
every year.
That's the narrative we get in the media is like, we need to do something now or it's going to get bad. And it's like, well, no, it's already bad, just not here.
But it's still happening here as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's what I want to be clear. Like, it is so much worse in other places, but, like, we are still having people die from climate change. Yeah. That's still happening.
But it's those types of deaths that sort of get erased as a statistic.
Old people.
As a statistic. It's like old people.
Disabled people,
vulnerable people. Like, breathing.
When we think people who are perceived as weak die, we think it's natural, and that's part of the ableist. That's like the COVID stuff. It's
exactly,
And it just gets, it's a statistic. I can't remember, there was some statistic that was like, more people died today from air quality than died in this thing that people think is dreadful.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember what it is, but, like, that puts it in perspective, because you hear someone dying from, like, breathing problems, and you don't necessarily associate that with, well, that wouldn't necessarily have happened if the air they were breathing was nicer air.
Yeah, and that's possible. Yeah. That we can do this, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, ultimately, there's just this overwhelming, and a lot of these studies are on Gen Z, you know, which I guess, annoyingly, I just hit that cusp. And I fall into.
Aww.
So when I say our generation, I'm talking about millennials because feels.
But I don't. Yeah, I'm on that cusp as well, more or less. And I don't identify with like the 35, 40 year olds. Like I see them as they're different to me.
I identify with people in their mid to sort of late 30s more than I identify with a lot of.
Would you say
in
we're in the same generation?
Yeah.
Because we're like. I'm 33, so we're like seven years apart.
But we're peers.
I think we'd have the same references. We'd have probably watched the same Saturday morning TV shows, all the same. Do you know what I mean? Like, we probably didn't have the social media when we were 10.
God, no. Yeah, no, exactly.
I think, like, that's a big break as well. When I was tweeting when I was 9, I'm like, what's going on?
Like, why am I able to do it? Yeah.
I think that's the generational shift is about reference as well. Because how old are you?
I'm 29. But, like, I identify partially with Gen Z and partially with millennials.
Don't look so sad about it.
No, but I think the issue with that divide is that a lot of times it comes down to like, oh, do you understand social media? Then you're Gen Z. And it's like, I do, but I also understand it from the perspective of knowing that, like, I was on Tumblr in like 2012, 2014 or whatever, right? And like before, like I was on Tumblr and I was on like YouTube before it was like YouTube. I was on, like, I remember when Instagram like suddenly blew up as a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember a time before this social media hellscape that we're all in. Existed, which we all love, by the way, because it pays our bills. We love it.
Stay on the internet, kids.
Don't stop scrolling.
Doesn't pay my bills anymore.
Shut up.
I got clean.
Is that when you ring the ad bell?
Ding, 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 ding.
Is that the ad bell?
Oh, gosh.
I think the distinction is if you're bilingual in digital. Like, I can explain what a Word document is to a boomer because I understand what it's like not to know. Like, I grew up faxing my friends.
What?
You what?
I used to fax my friends.
We're not the same. We're not in the same generation.
I used to draw drawings and fax them to my friend down the road. And then I'd run to her house, knock on her door and be like, did she just get my fax?
Okay,
okay, maybe not.
No.
Anyway, I think you can be millennial
you
when
just
you speak.
Ruined it. Yeah.
It's gone. I've aged myself.
Okay,
so much happened in those 3 years. I don't know what to tell you.
But, you know, to bring it sort of back to the sort of climate anxiety.
You put your homework on a floppy disk?
No.
Oh.
No, but we had to.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't put my homework
We did
on
have
it.
To learn about them and how to use them, which was really annoying.
In history, right? Yeah.
No, like, but seriously, it's just like, like it was so outdated by the time that we. It's just
mine was homework on a USB stick. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I think that's the divide right there.
I feel like here's the thing. I think the main dividing line is how much more you know about technology than your teacher, because millennials I think know more about technology than their teachers. Gen Z are bad with technology because everything's so easy for them.
Yeah.
Like think about how Apple just made sort of apps for everything. Now, like, okay, if you call Twitter an app, you are a Gen Z. You're a Gen Z.
Mm. Like, sure.
Twitter's a website. Yeah. It has an app. You know, yeah. I think that's a dividing line. But bringing it back to climate anxiety, a lot of this is around people who are Gen Z. And, you know, again, 60% feel climate-related anxiety on a daily basis. About 45% of young people feel climate-related anxiety and distress that affects their daily lives and ability to function normally, as I've said. Like, all of these things are impacting young people to a massive degree. And, like, in a sense, yes, of course it should. And I mean, like, when I look at these studies, I don't see, like, thankfully, I don't see people saying, you know, oh, wow, yeah, there's this sudden rise in anxiety around the climate about, like, you know, amongst this group of people. And how can we deal with it clinically? It's no, the way to deal with this problem is to deal with the problem. Because, like, I mean, I've read a few studies, all linked below, by the way, that kind of talk about it and talk about how trying to deal with it clinically is entirely kind of missing the point. And
I feel like if you're going to deal with that clinically, you need to also create another one called climate numbness, where, like, you or your children are going to be heavily impacted by climate change and you have not understood or accepted that and you're not anxious at all.
Yeah.
Like, that should also be a disorder.
Yes.
Well, if you're, like, completely like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, if you have no concept and it's not on your top 10 priorities that if you have children, they will have a horrible time, at least if you have children.
Yeah.
Or you. That should also be a clinical, because that's the thing is, like, this will ultimately be a test of us as a species and our ability to, like, model into the future and pay attention to what will happen in the future and take action. The animals don't really do that very much. Mm. What separates us from them is our, but one of the things is our ability to, like, understand, like, how things will turn out, like, years from now, which animals might do on a subconscious level, but they probably aren't doing on a conscious level. If we don't survive this, we don't deserve to survive it, and something will replace us.
Oh, yeah.
That probably will be better at modeling into the future like that.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
But you're right, it's the like, do you treat the people who, like, when you find out your house is on fire, start running around being like, oh God, there's a fire? Or the people who are like, that sounds fine, I'll just stay at the top of the house and wait for it to burn down. Yeah. Like, you're right, we're treating the wrong people. When you're experiencing climate anxiety, you might just be experiencing reality.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, if we talk about sort of maladaptive behaviors and whatnot, this sort of climate numbness that you're talking about there, Luke, that's maladaptive, right? Yeah. That is the behavior that is not healthy.
Yes.
Right?
That's what evolution's for.
Being anxious about a lion that's about to eat you is a healthy thing to be anxious about.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I've noticed that, you know, we've been leaving a lot of, like, you know, meat around and carcasses, and it's been attracting a lot of lions. And, like, you know, maybe if we start moving all of the carcasses now, the lions won't eat us.
I don't see any lions right now, Corey.
Right, but
I think you're crazy. Right, yeah. But you've got lion anxiety.
But do you remember how, like, last week?
That was last week.
Greg was eaten by a lion.
Yeah.
I told you, stop giving him those lion books. God, he's obsessed.
Oh, right. And, like, it's that. And also, I think we've got this sort of confluence of, you know, technology and sort of medical advancements where people are living longer and being healthier for longer, which is great. What isn't great is that we have a society wherein power is and wealth are compounded, you know, just consistently. And if people are living longer and being healthier and, like, you know, essentially kind of being more capable for longer periods of time, it means that sort of switch over in wealth is just not happening the way that it should, right? Like, if we look back to, and people asking, like, oh, is this really about, yes, all of this comes together. You can't separate the current sort of climate crisis we're in right now from the capitalist system that, you know, essentially sort of, like, you know, set the path for it, right? And ultimately what's going on is we've got, like, people taking all of the wealth and holding on to it, and that's not being passed down at all. I mean, yes, think about the fact that you could buy a house relatively easily, like, 50 years ago, you know, I don't know what year it is right now, but when people who are alive now were younger, right? A lot of people who own houses now bought them many, many years ago for way less than they're worth now, and now people can't afford them. Not only that, people don't have savings or, you know, like, any of the sort of material wealth necessary to be as comfortable as the people that came before them. And along with that, there's not the same sort of power. There, you know, with wealth comes power. There's not that power there. And also on top of that, there are people who are just living and staying in office, you know, especially in the US. You've got people who are like too old to be doing the job that they're doing, like realistically, not to be ageist here, but some, like some people genuinely like have dementia and are not being removed from office. Mm. Right. And like, why? Why, like, we, if we, like, from the looks of this, right, Gen Z, people 16 to 25, perhaps people, like, slightly older than that, millennials as well, seem to be, like, genuinely worried about the, about climate change. But we don't yet have that transition of power to us where we can do anything about it. So we're stuck in the back seat of this car careening into a river, being like, can we, like, can, is, when is it going to be my turn to drive? Because, like, I mm-hmm. would very much like to do a U-turn and get us out of the situation, but I can't while you're still, you know, behind the wheel. And I just feel like, oh, it's so frustrating.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, I know that we're all very busy. We've all got a lot going on, but it does seem like there needs to be some kind of revolution. What? And it does feel like the way that it's just like, oh God, I think there's going to have to be.
Well, yeah, with this.
And I'm bad at that. I don't know how to do a revolution.
You'll manage, I'm sure.
But I don't know. I feel like very, like, my dad was asking me about my pension the other day. And I do pay into a pension. Mm. But, like, I feel very ambivalent about whether that pension's ever, you know, it feels very immediate to me.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, and that's, that might sound like a really depressing fact to somebody. And I think I, you know, it comes from a place of climate anxiety, maybe. But I think it's also just a very logical, I don't know.
Yeah.
Will it happen? Will I get my pension?
Yeah. I feel like what you're saying about revolution, yeah. I mean, with this, I mean, things like even sort of how trans people are being treated right now, mm-hmm. LGBT people as a whole, like migrants, the current, I don't even want to call it a war, but the occupation of Gaza right now, I say right now, we are filming this a little bit in advance and that situation is developing very quickly. So God knows what's happening. Who knows how far into their ethnic cleansing they'll be by the time this comes out. But ultimately, you know, like all of this stuff that's going on and government's not really seeming to do very much about it. And even Keir Starmer, you know, Labour in the UK, just kind of leaning into the right wing end of it. Lads, like, you need to understand that we all hold the power. I mean, I know you understand that. We all hold the power. And you just, like, if you keep on pushing it, people are going to realize that and start chopping heads, you know? And I don't even know if I mean, like, you know, figuratively. Like, people are going to, like, heads are probably going to roll. There is going to be a revolution at some point if you keep pushing this the way that you're pushing this, right? Mm. Like, it's just, I think people in power feel too safe right now. And
these
they should.
These guys are getting way too cushy.
Yeah. Even no, the like, ambivalent British do have a boiling point. even us.
Yeah.
It will take so much.
Look, Scotland is the main thing, right? If England keep on kind of doing what they're doing to Scotland, man, I feel like we can only take so much. You know what I mean? Like,
it's fair. Everybody's getting fisted. And nobody's
and
having
not
fun.
Not in a fun way.
Everybody's getting fisted and nobody's having fun.
But yeah.
Not in a fun way.
It's just... And
but I think it's kind of this idea of like eco-anxiety. Are we just medicating anger? Are we trying to medicalize rational anger? And where does that anger go if we don't medicalize it?
But we're not. So that's exactly what I was about to say. I've got this lovely quote from a paper which you can find down below. It's the one where they surveyed 10,000 children. You know, it says there is an urgent need for further research into the emotional impact of climate change on children and young people, and for governments to validate their distress by taking urgent action on climate change. Right. So you know, realistically, there aren't people claiming like, oh, what do we do about this? And like, yes, we can treat people for anxiety when it's getting in the way of their daily sort of like living, just based on the fact that, you know, it would be good for people to be able to, you know, I guess, engage in society, be good little worker drones, and also for them to be moderately happy, I guess, as well. But like, the real treatment here, the real cure, is governments doing what they need to do for the people, and failing that, revolution.
And I suppose that when it comes to on a personal level, I feel like I've become less anxious by not gaslighting myself. So even, do you know, even if I'm like, the government's gaslighting me, other people in my life, but I'm going to, do you know what I mean? Just admit it to myself that this is what I believe.
Yeah.
And it seems true.
Yeah.
And then start living a little bit like that, if you can, in whatever way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. It's tough. And like, I've got some more stuff here that I just want to add from different papers. You know, it talks about the media being full of stories about climate anxiety, eco anxiety, climate grief, and all of these sorts of things. But like, ultimately, this is an impact of climate change on top of all of the health impacts we've spoken about already. And it doesn't seem to be pathological. That's the key thing here, right? And when we like create a sort of mental health disorder of something, we're pathologizing it, right? You know, we pathologize autism, we pathologize ADHD, we pathologize certain behaviors, you know? And in this sense, anxiety doesn't indicate a problem with mental health, as we've been saying, right? And this is all coming from like a paper which you can find down below again, but anxiety can be an adaptive function is a quote, like quite literally an adaptive function. And it's important to avoid pathologizing the emotional response to climate change. And a focus on mental health can imply that the emotional response is inappropriate, right? It's just ridiculous. Like this is more significantly affecting younger people. Realistically, the people who are going to have to deal with this, the people who had no choice in this, the people who have been born into a world that is doomed immediately, you know, from their conception, from their birth, they have been born into a doomed world. And feeling bad about that is very normal, you know? So do something, I get. That's do something.
Do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, anything. Anything
maybe
positive.
Anything.
But yeah, no, I mean, ultimately, and another part of this conclusion, I think is really sort of, it's really sort of, I wouldn't say profound, but I like the quote. Climate change is not just an environmental, but also a psychological problem. And it is. It's a psychological problem. It's watching the end of the world happen in slow motion. It's horrid. And that's really what I've got to say on climate anxiety. It doesn't really exist. It's just climate change, innit?
It's just an accurate response to a real fact.
Yeah.
Like, it's not in our heads.
No, it's not in our heads. No. It is you reacting appropriately to what is going on around you. That's what I'd say. And that's what many scientists would say as well. Whoa. Seems like it's just time for a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Climate anxiety edition. Ah, oh no. Oh.
So the rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finish asking the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
A bucket with which to pail the water out of their house as it sinks below the ceiling.
It's all to play for.
Does that increase the price that Aquaman pays, huh?
It means he has to wait a little bit longer. Wait a little bit longer.
And Luke, what is your buzzer?
Ah!
And Lena, what's your buzzer?
Just a goblin being scared of climate change.
So, my question for you is, the youth nonprofit organization Force of Nature found that what percentage of young people feel hopeless in the face of climate crisis?
Ah!
Whoa! I saw Lena move first, so I'm going to give it to you.
70%.
Ding, ding, ding! That is correct!
One.
Well done! That's a pretty horrible statistic to end on.
We should all have a moment of silence.
Well, that is all from us, but before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Denito and Glitchrabbit, and thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod. Wow, a performance.
@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
And you can follow me at Lena Norms everywhere.
Why are you looking at me? Look at them.
Everywhere. Apart from TikTok.